Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products, and businesses, real life stories. It's all right here for you with this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Remember to visit us online, too, at besteveryou.com. And now here's your host, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino.
Hello, everybody, and happy Sunday night. We don't do very many shows on Sunday nights, but we do when we have awesome guests. And I know you're all waiting to hear his voice instead of mine, but Bernard Robichaud is with us. And we have a couple other things with us. I have a cat in my room, and he's got a parrot in the background. So we're not sure how this is going to go. And if creatures are making noise in the background, you know, it's all good. Love for all creatures. But it's been quite an interesting 10 days on my end, too. I'm going to try not to sneeze, cough, blow my nose. What else, Bernard? I had the flu for 10 days. How are you feeling? Are you all good?
I'm good. Yeah, thank you for having me on, Elizabeth. It's very kind of you to think of me.
Well, thank you for being here, and I think we're going to try and sneak in the whole hour, but we'll see if my voice holds up and all that good stuff. But what a cool moment! I'm so glad you're with us, and I want to direct people to your website because a lot of people listen online, and you know, are kind of poking their nose around for other things while they're listening. And so if you're doing that, his website is BernardRobichaud.com, and that is spelled BernardRobichaud.com. So that's his website. Everything that we're talking about is there, and it's got great links to all the things that he's done. But you're going to know him as fans know you worldwide as Cyrus, the gun-toting, drug-dealing nemesis from the hit TV show Trailer Park Boys, and that's at Trailer Park Boys on Twitter. But you started out as a model. Tell me about that a little bit.
I was just one of those things that I felt like I could do to earn extra cash when I was younger. At the time I started, I just finished high school. I had some extra cash in my pocket, and I went to see a local designer and asked her to make me some clothes. And before I knew that, she was asking me if I would model my clothes that she made me in a fashion show. And after that, it just kind of went from there. Yeah. So it's one of those things. I guess if I didn't have the extra cash to go get some clothes made, it wouldn't have happened. I just happened to, it was a time, late 70s. So, you know, disco era, and I wanted to be flashy on the dance floor. I got some flashy clothes made. And
I think we need some pictures of that somewhere. You need to resurrect.
Yeah, you just have to use the pictures in your own head for that one, you know. The picture, I don't know.
I don't know either.
Cario or, John Travolta and Saturday Night Live or something like that, or
so
Saturday
funny.
Night Fever, rather.
Or Saturday Night Live, even, maybe, right?
Probably back in the 70s, Saturday Night Fever was more the thing. But, yeah, Saturday Night Live probably had some disco moments there. Steve Martin, and Steve Martin, I think maybe he might have done that. Wild and Crazy Guys.
Crazy
kind
Guys,
of
Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to just start out. We're going to just go right to Trailer Park Boys because I know I told one of my kids that you were going to be on, and they told their friends, and their friends told their friends. Everybody's like, oh my God, we watch that show all the time. So what is Trailer Park
cool.
Boys?
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. You got
what is Trailer Park Boys? It's a mockumentary comedy based around a group of people that live in a trailer park, and the trials and tribulations of three guys trying to make their life easy, I guess, you know, to find the easy road. I played the antagonist in the show since the very beginning. The arch nemesis, I guess, of the three boys. It was 17, 18 years now. I guess they shot season 12, I think, this summer. I didn't do it after season 9, so 10, 11, and 12 I didn't do. They just recently asked me to come back, so we'll go from there. I'm not going to get into any of that, but because I don't know what's in store for me from there. But I am going to work with them again. So
awesome! Where can people watch that? How do you watch Trailer Park Boys?
Netflix has everything from the very first season right through, I don't know about the movies. That it may have the movies as well as some of the. As well as the specials that we did, but I'm not sure. I've never watched the show. I've never watched anything I've ever been in. I can't really tell you what's there on Netflix. I do see it when I go on Netflix. I do see it there, so I can tell your audience that I can't watch it on Netflix. I do know that there are some stations that are still carrying it on television. I'm just not sure which stations and whether or not those are networks that are carried in the U.S. So, but most people, I think, nowadays get Netflix, so it's easy for them to pick it up there.
Yeah, I may or may not have binge-watched it. I'm not going to admit what I did.
Yeah.
A lot of people do.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's a popular show, globally now. I mean, I think it was before it went to Netflix. I think at one point, the original producers, said that it was syndicated in maybe 30 countries around the world. I know I did a radio interview one time with a gentleman from Milan, Italy. So I do know that they dubbed Cyrus's voice in the Sicilian accent. I have done some appearances and things out west in Western Canada. I do remember being in Calgary at one time and doing an appearance, and four Korean girls came into and were texting back to care. They were very excited that they got to take pictures with me. So apparently it's in Korea as well. So
awesome.
It's a broad, a broad range of countries. Poland, I've seen some fans in Poland, Germany, England for sure. It's Brazil, I think, South America, places there get it for sure. It's kind of crazy, really, you know, how far reaching it's been. And, you know, it's crossed ageist boundaries. I mean, I've signed autographs for people from 7 to 70. So it's a little strange, humbling. At the same time, to think that it came from such a small, you know, from the maritime provinces of Canada, and it's touched as many people as it has. It's and certainly the characters have done the same thing, you know, and become somewhat iconic in that regard. And just their lines alone have touched many. So very proud and humbled at the same time to be to have been a part of it. That's for sure.
Now, who else stars in it? And, you know, just talk a little bit more about it, like some of your favorite other characters, or, you know, just give us a little bit more show information, if you will.
Well, it's Rob Wells plays Ricky. J.P. Tremblay plays Julian. Mike Smith plays Bubbles, I guess. From, you know, those are the three key players. I think Bubbles is probably the most popular amongst most of the viewers, just because of his likable character. John Dunsworth, who just recently passed away, of course, was a big star of the show. He played Mr. Leahy, and Pat Roach, of course, who played Randy. Jonathan Torrance, who played J-Rock. Lucy DeCouture, who played Lucy. Sarah Dunsworth, who played Sarah. So, you know, there's Corey Bowles, who played Corey, you know, and Corey's doing quite well with himself, right, with Bad Cop now, which has just been picked up for distribution, his recent movie. So, you know, it's also gave us all a stepping stone to further our careers and develop our own brands, and which is key in today's film and television industry, that's for sure.
Yeah, I love it. I love it when you have something like that, and then people sort of go off in their own different directions, but still have that as at the core. It's neat to see everybody grow and change and everything. But, you know, I know you a little bit just from talking to you offline and off the show, just starting to get to know you as one of my pals. And you're such a nice guy. I mean, totally, you know, real life, super, super cool and super funny and nice and everything. Where do you go to get that? Get all the material, you know, get all that for that part. Because that's, I went on YouTube, for example, and I just saw, you know, Best of Cyrus, aside from my may or may not have binged it. Where do you get all that from?
I think some of it's my childhood. I didn't grow up in the best neighborhoods in growing up. So I think, you know, just mostly the guys I grew up around, you know, I mean, it's kind of a gray area, you know. Some days you went to school and you were in a fight and, you know, the same guy you were playing hockey with that evening. So, you know, it was, I think a lot of it was just the guys I went to school with. You know, my family, growing up, the family atmosphere was never quite what I guess would be called the norm. I spent a lot of time in the mirrors, you know, thinking about how I was going to act out revenge on my dad. So I think some of that stems from that. It's probably where the acting ability comes from. I've read other biographies of other talents over the course of 36 years I've been acting. Robin Williams spent a lot of time in the mirror as well. Been other actors that have done the same thing. I think it's the only way to act out. You have no power, so the only way to engage and to kind of get rid of the frustrations and the torment is to spend the time in the mirror and kind of act those out. It's either that or you go out and you act it out on the street, and sometimes that's not necessarily the best way to go. That ends up getting you in trouble, I think, over time, which is why I ended up getting into acting, quite frankly. I was that's the way I was headed, you know. After I was playing a lot of sports. That was great. But after the sports, the drinking part came in, and, you know, there's that Jekyll and Hyde kind of thing that was happening, and I needed to find an outlet to be able to, you know, just release all those pent-up problems that I had, I think, growing up. And acting afforded me that. It allowed me to express myself in ways I hadn't been able to figure out how. So I was lucky.
Well, lucky, but also smart, because it sounds like you had a choice to make too. You could have easily done something else, it sounds like, or maybe not so easily. But do you remember making like a conscious choice, like, I'm not going to do that? Or did somebody help you? Did you have any kind of mentor or anything like that? Or is this just all the power within you?
You know, I think it's just a series of circumstances that happened. I went to Toronto as a model. A modeling agent there said that she couldn't use me. She had just hired another model that looked like my brother, and the picture definitely supported her decision on, you know, she thought I should be an actor after about an hour of conversation. She asked me if I had ever thought of that. I said, yeah, I'm sure I have, and so has 35 million other people in the state of California.
Yeah.
I came home from that and never really thought much of it until couple of fights over the course of a few weekends, and thought I killed somebody one night when I hit him. And
yeah.
I think the only thing that saved me there was a couple of guys. That one guy inside the bar was a friend of mine who I was bouncing with, had seen what happened. He saw the guy hit me first.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it. It was a sucker punch, and I just kind of lost it. And the other two guys in the paddy wagon from the police department were guys I played basketball with. And so there wasn't anything that happened. I was well known in the area from playing sports. They took my buddy, the bouncer's, word for what happened, and they charged the other guy. But I think the fear of what happened kind of struck me the hardest. And a buddy of mine, my best friend at the time, said, if you don't find an outlet, man, you're going to probably end up in prison someday. You can't just go around doing that sort of thing. And, why don't you go take an acting class or something, or do something, maybe that'll help. And, that's kind of when I thought, oh, geez, there was that agent that said, you should be an actor. Yeah, so I auditioned for theater school at Dalhousie University in Halifax, and was accepted, and I went. So that's pretty much how that all came about.
Makes a lot of sense. When you go to, you're all over the internet. You can, just Google you, and all this, all this wonderful acting and all this stuff comes up. But what's a question that you get asked over and over again? And what's the answer? Because we're just going to go ahead and ask that same question. What is a question that you get asked?
I don't know. Recently, because of Trailer Park Boys, it's usually people just want me to say one of the lines that I say on the show so they can hear it, coming out of my mouth in front of them. That's usually, a lot of people, it's funny, I think they know who I am, but they'd rather just call me by the character name. So I get that a lot, which is kind of a little weird, because of course I'm not the character. I'm just the guy playing it. A lot of times people, they just identify with the character and they just want me to say one of the lines from the show to them, because it's the lines. I think there's been a lot of iconic lines, not just from the character, but from many of the characters over the years. And, the Cyrus character has several that I think you have to do one now.
You have to do one now.
I
don't know what they are, so now you have to do one.
Yeah, well, there's one that's got a little bit explicit. You can't really say it with your audience.
Okay.
He says, see, this father gave me this when I was in grade 7, 9mm, safety always off. Told me he was proud of me once, effing prick, that sort of thing. So, that's kind of like this. It's funny because I get people that will come up to me and say the lines as if I kind of never heard of them. It's kind of weird, you know. Dude, that's a good line. Yeah, I never heard that one before.
That's hilarious.
So, yeah.
Okay, so I do have to actually have you say something, though, but it's not quite that. It's Hi, Nick Lane.
Hi, Nick Lane?
That. Yep, that's it. Hi, Nick Lane.
Hi, Nick
Lane.
That's
the guy.
Okay. Oh, that's,
there you go.
That was easy.
Yeah. Nick will like that a lot. That's
never,
my son's best friend.
I never said that on the show.
No. Nope.
But okay. That's good. Well, I hope Nick's happy with that.
I bet he is. That's hilarious.
Nick will be able to take this radio portion of the show because it's been dedicated to Nick Lane. And he'll be able to edit that out and put it on his phone. So this is Cyrus calling my name, Nick Lane.
There you go.
Yeah, there you
oh
go.
Oh, my gosh. That'll be awesome.
We'll be
all
right.
With
that.
Yeah,
Cam
I
will be able to do
nice.
That, too. We'll be able to use that. You know, Cam okay. and Nick together will be able to hang out together and be able to put this both on their as ringtones.
Now you got to do Cam Guarino.
Cam Guarino and Nick Lane. This is your iTunes, your ringtone for iTunes, for your iPhone. There you go. Cyrus
perfect.
Said so.
That's so cute. All right. That's so funny. Thank you for doing that.
No problem. You should be able to get like a bunch of, you know, 10,000 Twitter followers from that alone.
You probably have a business there, actually. You probably just invented a business, you know.
If everybody can, everybody listening can get two people to follow me, I will have. That's all we're asking for, folks. It's just two people at a time. Man. Just not asking for a lot here.
I charge like $10.
I'm not
you probably have a
sure
ringtone service now. I'll say
if everybody calls up, I can make a ringtone for everybody.
Charge them $5. There you go. $5 a ringtone.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. There's probably $1 million in that idea. Yeah. I never really thought of it. Yeah. You call me
you
up
go.
And I send me $5 through e-transfer, and I'll make you, and we'll do a ringtone for you.
Bingo.
Yeah, we'll do
you heard it here first,
right?
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks.
Best Elizabeth, ever you
for
show.
Promoting, my yeah. I'm just having
God.
To donate most of that money to something else, like, don't know, underprivileged children or something, which would be okay.
Yeah, exactly. So if you make good of it, it's awesome. So so you've been in a lot of other roles, though. I mean, I know we're talking a lot about Trailer Park Boys here, but what are some of your favorite roles and why, or people that you've worked with? Or, you know, give us some insight into other things that you've done.
I guess I worked with did Ambulance Girl with Kathy Bates, directed that, and had a cameo role with Kathy. I was the victim on the motorcycle accident. Let out a big screech while she touched my leg, and she jumped back in fright. I don't think she was expecting that. It was kind of funny. James Caan.
I love James Caan. I love that movie Rollerball. Yeah. He well, as a kid, I don't know why I love Rollerball. Have you ever seen that movie?
Yeah. Yes, I have. Yeah, years ago. Yeah.
Slapshot's my other one I love, but that he's not
Slapshot,
in that
Slapshot. Yeah. No. No. Slapshot. That was.
I can't remember. Are you guys brothers? You know that? That's a great one. Paul Newman was in that one.
Tom Newman. Yeah.
Paul
Newman.
Yeah.
What
about Lifetime? What?
In Lifetime, we just did Sea Change. That was directed by Chris Grismer. It was that was based on Amy Friedman's New York bestseller of the same name. So it was kind of like Vampire Diaries meets Haven, kind of thing. Mm. So. that was kind of a supernatural sort of, that was pretty cool. We were hoping it would go to camera for episodic TV. It was shot as a pilot originally, so I'm not sure if it will or not. I guess we'll soon find out, because it just came out in September of 17 there, so it's possible that Lifetime will still do something with it. That was Sean Piller and produced that. I worked with Sean before when we had a recurring role in Haven. And that was a fun project to work with. Billy Zane and I did a movie together, which was a lot of fun to work with. Billy was very giving, a very giving actor. Corey Haim and I, Corey and I became very close. Still talk to his mom. She's a beautiful person. And that was kind of sad losing him shortly after that movie was shot.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yes. That's a terrible loss right there, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's a gifted actor.
Yeah, very.
No question.
Very. And Billy Zane, too. I like Billy Zane a lot. I don't know him personally or anything like that, of course. But, I mean, you know, you always see movies with him in them, and they're good. You can count on him.
He's a good actor. There's no doubt about that. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I
enjoyed working with him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoyed working with him.
Yeah. I think it's always cool when you can, meet somebody who's been in a lot of different things and they're not disappointing to meet in person. I always think that's really nice when they're actually really nice people. Like they don't blow you off or they, you know, especially with kids too, because, you know, I always cringe when like a kid comes up to somebody and they're like all in that idle moment and the guy or girl blows them off. You know, you're like, no, I don't have time for you. You know, that kind of thing. You're like, no, it's a kid. Don't do that.
Yeah. So. No, I don't think I could ever do that really. I mean, I think sometimes, you know, we as entertainers, I think sometimes we just forget, because we, you know, you lose your anonymity.
Sure.
So sometimes it's difficult because you're out in the limelight all the time. And so there's always people coming up to you. And I think sometimes it's, you know, we kind of forget that if it wasn't for those people who are supporting us and just, you know, over the top, enthused and just, you know, blown away that you're there. Or they see you. I would hate to kind of hurt somebody's feelings like that. I think it's, you know, as much as you're in this industry, I think you have to kind of sometimes think, well, you know, yeah, if I didn't want those things to happen, then maybe I should have picked another industry or field to be in. Because I think that we're out there. We have an obligation to kind of, you know, I mean, there's a certain length I think you have to go to, but I think you have to be able to appreciate. I would never, like, for children, I think that would be just wrong. But, you know, I try to be gracious and answer, you know, emails that I get. I mean, of course, you get some emails that are a little off the wall, and you just have to kind of file those away. But
I got one yesterday. I had to actually report. Just like, seriously, you're going to send me that? Really? I don't think so. You must get some doozies if I'm getting those. It's like, wow.
So I try to answer the emails when I get them.
Good.
I think people are just genuinely interested, you know, for the most part, and you know, just want to have, you know, some communication, or at least to say that they talk to you, that they ask you a legitimate question. I no different than being an interview, I guess, just on a very smaller scale. And so I try to answer those best
That's
I can.
Awesome.
Or, I mean, there's, you know, sometimes I can't clearly, You know, I can't answer them all. It'd be a full-time job, but and some are already out there. The just person just really needed to do a little bit more research, I think, just for the question. But when it comes to, you know, there's people that just ask me about my health and stuff like that. And so, you know, it's very kind for them to reach out and just ask me how I'm doing, those sort of things. So.
Yeah. You know, we're going to get to your health in a second because I know you've had a health scare recently. But one of the coolest people I've ever met in person is Richard Gere. And I didn't meet him as an adult. That's why I talk about the whole kid thing, because I grew up in Iowa, and he was speaking, and it was more of a, I think it was more of a political thing at the time even, but my mom grabbed me and she said, you're going to just freak out here. Richard Gere's in town and he's up at Duck Creek Mall, and Duck Creek Mall is this tiny little mall. And I'm like, no way, that place has got to be packed with, like, you know, 50,000 people waiting to meet Richard Gere. And it was a very tiny audience, and you got to go right up to Richard Gere and say hello. And I might have been 10, maybe 12, but I knew who Richard Gere was. He was so sweet. I mean, so sweet. And my mom's drop dead gorgeous. My mom is like 5'9" and, you know, beautiful blonde. My mom's a model, you know, she's beautiful. And so it was so much fun. And what a sweet person. And that kind of made that, like, that imprint on me, you know, where I'm like, that's how people should be. And so I kind of judge everybody. I just shouldn't do that, I know. But I do, based like on that one experience I had with a kid, I always wanted everybody I met, like, you know, that was famous like that, to be like that nice, because he was really cool. Just sweet as all get out, and just gracious and kind and well-spoken, and, you know, just a really a sweet person. So that was cool. Anyway, I don't know why I wanted to share that, but
I don't know. It's a nice experience, though, so that's good. Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about your health, because, you know, I told you I had the flu, and what'd you say? What was your response
not
again?
Really, it's not really the same thing. I don't get sick. I get cancer.
Yeah. When did you find that out? And that had to, you know, were you like, what? You know, how's that go?
I don't remember much after I was told. I think I was in shock. October 6th, I found out. It was just a fluke. I didn't have kind of symptoms or anything. No, I didn't have any symptoms. I was healthy as a horse. I went in for some, I went in to get some DHEA, which is really helps you, it helps you create your own testosterone. It increases your own testosterone levels because you start to lose them over 40. And so it would just help you eat better, sleep better, work out better. And I've always gotten roles because of my physicality. So it made sense, you know. And I was on the DHEA, to see a naturopath, on the DHEA for a couple of weeks or so, I guess. And then they called me up and said that my PSA levels were 7.5 and I needed to talk to a urologist. So I didn't really know what the hell that meant at the time, quite frankly, but it didn't sound good because they canceled the prescription for me. So made a phone call and went from there.
And was a diagnosis of, is it like, it's prostate cancer, right?
Yeah, it was prostate cancer. Yeah, exactly.
And
and
what do they?
Well, I mean, it could have been anything, right?
It could have been the prescription, or they don't have a clue.
Could have been the prescription. We didn't know. Could have been any kind of cancer. I guess it wouldn't necessarily have to be prostate cancer. They checked all my vital organs and to see rule all those out. And then, you know, took 12 biopsies of my prostate and and seven of them came back positive. So, you know, I didn't have it before, so it was presumed it was aggressive, and there wasn't really any time to kind of form my thought processes or make any sort of large transmogrification on, you know, how life should be and thought processes and way of eating and, you know, diet, to see whether or not it would just disappear. I wasn't planning on having any more children, so the natural option was to operate and hope for the best, which is what they did. So,
yeah.
So I found that out on October 6th. I went in for reconstructive surgery on my rotator cuff on October 28th.
Oh.
4 weeks later, I went in on a knife for prostate cancer. 2 weeks after that, found out my shoulder was infected and went in for a PICC line for antibiotics for 6 weeks into my heart. And emergency surgery on my shoulder to have that cleaned out and put back together again. So quite a lot happened in about 6 weeks there of operations and stuff. So needless to say, I'm happy. I'm well. First week of January, I had my consultation with my friend who was the urologist. And I think they got it early enough. There was nothing in the lymph nodes. There was nothing in the tissue around the prostate. So cancer-free.
Good.
And shoulders working pretty good right now. Still, you know, I've obviously have an awful lot of recuperation time left. I mean, there was three operations in 6 weeks, so.
Oh yeah.
Plus all the anesthetics, so which is still in my system. So, you know, every day I feel a little healthier and better than I did the day before. So it's all good.
That's good to hear.
I guess so. Yeah, I'm very grateful that I had the people behind me that I did and the support that I had. So, and thanks for all the fans and friends that wrote in and supported me, because it made a huge difference. That's for sure.
Well,
You're the first interview that I've had since I made the announcement that I had cancer. This is the first one that told anybody that's listening that I'm cancer free. So once this interview is over, if the link can go on my fan pages and on my Twitter pages, and that'd be awesome. I don't know how you do that, so
I got you covered.
So that's that.
I got you. But I want to make sure people know, and people know me well enough to know that I'm not one to have a guest on and, you know, go all health prying on them or anything like that, or do anything, you know, that's profoundly to announce something or anything like that. I'm not like that. Where I'm coming from is more of letting you know that we posted this show, and when I very first let people know that I was going to have you on, and we talked just very in the background a little bit, I hashtagged it prostate cancer, because you were on Twitter kind of talking about it a little bit with other celebrities and things like that. And I don't know if you know this or not, and I don't know if she's reached out to you yet or not, but I have a friend here in the New England area who's husband was just diagnosed with prostate cancer. And so she's listening intently on what you're saying about it and so forth, because she's in panic mode. And
I don't think she should be. You know, I think it's like a 90% cure rate. I think he's certainly going to go through some issues afterward, you know, the scar. Things that you wouldn't think of that women are, you know, from 13 on, you know, incontinence, which just doesn't happen, you know, doesn't happen to every man, but there's certainly going to be some of that. So, and having to wear that sort of thing as a man, you know, you suddenly you don't have to most of your life, and then suddenly you are not psychologically. I didn't find it, you know, helpful that there was very little out there and to help a man overcome that. If they're trying to get better, then part of that is the psychological part, and I didn't see them helping in any way there. The stuff that's on the marketplace wouldn't make any man, I don't think, feel good about himself. So I'd tell her just to be, you know, be there for him. Maybe go in and get the pads for him, because, you know, walking up in a place where you don't, you know, everybody knows who you are. And certainly in my position, it was difficult because everybody knows who I am. So, so there's that. And you know, of course, you know, sex life is going to change, right? I mean, it's not, it's going to take time for everything to kind of work again. And there's a process that, you know, that he'll have to go through in order to do that. And again, you know, not easily remedied, because, you know, the things that, you know, you'll get, you know, prescriptions for and think that your healthcare provider will cover for aren't covered, because they're called, you know, they think they're, you know, what do they call them? That was the first
uncovered
time I heard it. I thought,
yeah, I don't know what it is. No, it's not covered by insurance.
Well, it's kind of, no, it's not covered by insurance because it's considered a recreational drug.
Oh, I get it.
You know, it's everybody's using it, so they don't consider it for a man that's gone through prostate cancer. They don't consider it like rehabilitation, and yet it is, which is kind of strange because, you know, one out of seven men are going to get it, whether they like it or not. You know, one in 29 are going to die from it, whether they like it or not, just because probably, you know, with a 90%, it's just waiting too long, basically. Because if you have a 90%, you just didn't have, you're like me, didn't have any symptoms, and then find out one day it's too late.
If you were going to have symptoms, what would they be? I mean, that might help too.
You know, I think, you know, you have problems urinating. Usually it's a problem having, getting an erection, you know, those kinds of things. But you know, again, I never had any problems.
Yeah.
I didn't have it. I never, you know, I never had
no
any
pain or anything.
Had, you know,
yeah, okay.
No, nothing like that. So you wouldn't know, you know, if everything's just working like the way it would normally work. I mean, you know, and without tested, you know, a normal GP might just call it BPH. You know, it's a little swelling of the prostate, which is causing you not to, you know, pee strong all the time, right? So
right.
It's you know, it's a bit of an education process, and it's I think for most men, you know, I'm glad there's support groups out there, but you know, some of the things that I, you know, went to try to get make people more aware, didn't seem to be getting anywhere. You know, I talked to Movember people. Clearly, I guess they're just really more interested in selling T-shirts and hats, and you know, every time I see an ad from them during the month of November, it was guys that clearly didn't look like they needed to worry about prostate cancer for at least 30 years. So I wasn't really sure where the money was going. but have talked to lots of doctors and who kind of laugh and say, follow the money trail. A lot of people getting paid, they say, from a lot of charities, and very little money from charities ends up going to the actual
charity.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't
know.
They
have to research your charities,
that's
for
the case.
Sure.
You definitely do.
Because
that's what I found. I thought here's a guy who's globally known. Maybe I don't have as many Twitter followers as another celebrity who might have gone through it, but I wasn't interested in selling, T-shirts or anything online with a sticker on it that said, who my name was, or saying that it's going to prostate cancer. I mean, there's a lot of other things out there that could have been better for that, like, charity to come up with. Show me what you're doing for prostate cancer. Like, are you giving money to cancer? And let's see how much money that is. Where's the 100% of the, you got to pay for the T-shirts. You got to pay for this. You got to pay for those things. So you got to pay for all the people that are doing all this multimedia and all this, stuff for. So I get that there's things out there that you have to pay for, but I wasn't seeing why I couldn't be tagged with the fact that I had prostate cancer. And I was willing to go, and do whatever I had to in order to make other men aware. I thought I was healthy as a horse. If it wasn't for the DHEA, it probably one of those statistics, 1 in 29 guys that would have died from it.
Well,
so.
I like what you post. And I think as long as you, anytime you, I know it's silly, but in this day and age, anytime you put a hashtag on something, it's searchable and it goes right into, Google quite easily. So, I think if you have that on your website or your social media, all of those things, I think you're probably going to be a constant source of information for people because, cancer diagnosis can be, I think you put it so eloquently with, it can be mentally devastating. Forget the physical for a second, go over to the mental part of it. And there's, it's both or more.
No question. And, you're supposed to think positively. So,
it's
very difficult to get around. Yeah, you've got highs and lows there all the time. So it's very difficult to get past that once you're told that. I mean, especially if somebody's telling you they don't know what the outcome's going to be. I mean, really?
It's
I would rather not
then.
Know what the outcome. I mean, hey, yeah. Don't tell me what the outcome's going to be. Let's be real. It's not a disease. It's based on stress. It's the disorder from stress levels. I mean, I would rather not know that there was no possibility of return. I would rather just, go in, give me the treatment or whatever you think, and then start doing the research and seeing what else I can do for myself in order to, cure myself of
I love
that.
I love the book, it's called Never Fear Cancer Again by Raymond Francis. I don't know if you've ever heard of that book, but Dr. Raymond Francis, it's a little bit radical in parts, but it's a pretty interesting take on he basically, he's, I don't know how old he is now or if he's still alive as I'm talking about him. He had a cancer diagnosis that was, pretty much untreatable and not going to live from it. And he turned it all around.
I think there's lots of people that can do that. I think, there's a couple of great books out there that I've read too. Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton. That's a big insight, into cell biology and quantum physics. Now, it doesn't have to be all about quantum physics, but what he explains in the book, how the cell membrane and the environment and how your body works. Another great website or to even check out is PsychK, PsychK. It's all about, changing your belief system from your subconscious. It may be, for people that are out there looking at how to change their mindset and look at things from a different point of view, different way to approach life, those mm-hmm. two books and possibly the, you know, to do a seminar or a workshop on one of those two things would, I think, would be helpful. That's just my opinion. I'm not saying, you know, I'm not being endorsed by them in any way. So
no, we get
but
it.
I certainly understand, you know, the mindset behind it, and I think there's a lot of truth to it. So yeah. I'm just throwing stuff out there for. I'm just trying to help, you know. So
yeah.
I think that's very helpful,
and it's those are two kind of interesting books, and websites and so forth, with or without cancer, really.
Well, I think both of those books, you know, it's not just cancer. I think it's just, you know, it gives you a better understanding of what they're discovering now and how the body works and the cells, mm-hmm. and how it's connected to the mind and the subconscious mind and how the brain and, you know, they got, you know, to read it.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah, it really is.
I really do truly believe that because I just remember being really, really, you know, when I was way younger, I'm old now, but when I was way younger, there's a lot of stress involved with, you know, trying to do the kind of travel I was trying to do with my job and having two little kids and, you know, just flying around the country and all this stuff. And I think that's how I kind of landed some food allergies. Just the inflammation was so out of control and the stress and the this and the that, and the kids were little joys. It was the job that was, you know, it was a nice job and everything like that. But you just, I felt so freaked out that I couldn't be everywhere at once. Like I would go to mm-hmm. do my job and then worry about the kids or be home with the kids and worry about my job. And it was just like this endless cycle of like chaotic stress for me. And I was one of those moms who's like, you know, I just was one of those moms who like didn't want to put my kids in daycare. And so I was like mm-hmm. always in my own way, you know, just totally mm-hmm. like everybody would have all these suggestions for me. And I'd be like, no. And just constantly in my own way. And I think I just sort of made myself pretty sick.
Well, I can see how that could happen for sure. So, you know, you're not sick now, so that's good.
No, yeah, exactly. I still have food allergies, but, you know, they're pretty under control. But, okay, so let's shift off health for a little while because I don't know how many. Can you keep talking? Do you have 20 more minutes or so or 15 more minutes? Are you good?
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit more. Okay, good. Yeah. I want to talk to you about goals and dreams.
Are we boring anybody out there?
No, we're not boring anybody. The parrot's quiet.
Yeah.
So we need the parrot back. You know, the parrot's asleep. what I wanted to talk to you about while we're on the books and the topics of, you know, all the mental part of everything. What are you've been acting for a long time, and you know, I can see that you want to keep doing this and all this stuff. And you know, what are your goals and dreams? Let's go back to acting for a little bit. What goals and dreams?
I've always been happy with just being able to work in the field that I'm doing it. So, I guess my goal is to continue doing that. Moving to California, in July, looks like. So my intent is to, further my career, bring my brand out there. My management is out there now. My agents already obviously, you know, represent me globally. So I'll go out there and I'm going out in April. So I'll meet some people then, but yeah, that's the goal, is to continue with that. And, you know, go from there and take what comes my way. I've always been fortunate enough to be able to work as much as I have out of the Maritimes for stuff being shot from or being produced out of the U.S. or Toronto or Upper Canada and being shot here in the Maritimes. So I think that if I could bring my brand and just go back to the States, be better off.
You're from here, right?
That's that. Boston originally, yeah. Grew up in Canada, then moved back to the States. Yeah, and I moved from California to New Brunswick back in 95. So, yeah, 95.
Good.
So that's the plan.
Got it. And what are you working on right now? I know you've got you kind of talked to us a little bit about Trailer Park Boys maybe coming back, but what have you got going on? I know you're a writer too, and we didn't talk about that at all.
No, I haven't written a lot lately. We started doing something with a thing with Barry Dunn called Cranky Cab, but it's been kind of put on a shelf right now, just because the move. Number one, number two, we've got been asked to do about three different movies right now. I've got a script here in front of me that I just received the other day from a friend of mine who's a writer in Vancouver. So I've got to read that. I've got another movie supposed to be shot in Ottawa this summer, spring and summer. Trailer Park Boys. I've been asked to do a couple of tours for stand-up comedy. So that looks like something I would like to do again. And let's see. There's a friend of mine, Michael Masucci in Virginia, is doing a series called Visions of Rock. Mm-hmm. It's in pre-production right now, and it's based on, it's kind of, I think, Battle of the Bands, but it's based on a true story of a band that won it and went on to back up some of the biggest groups in the world and play into 80,000 audiences. So I've just been put on the IMDb page as cast for that. So I'm supposed to do 5 weeks, I think. I don't know, 5 to 7 weeks in Virginia this summer. So looking forward to that. And so if anybody's, should go to Facebook page, look up Visions of Rock. That's with a Z. And support Michael. He's a great guy. He's really great people. And
please name one more time for me. Michael. What?
Michael Masucci. 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 Actually, Michael directed the movie I did with Corey Haim.
Got it. Yep. Okay. That's neat.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah.
And vision. What's the name again? Visions of.
What's that?
What's the name of it again? Visions of?
Rock.
Rock. Okay. That's what I thought you said.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Quite a few projects on the go right now. Haven't contracts all haven't been signed yet, but it all looks good.
Good. That's great to hear. All right. Well, we're going to wind up a little bit. I've got, I wanted to talk to you about sports, but I actually, people have tweeted a few things in, so we're going to just take a couple questions from listeners.
Okay.
Somebody, are you ready? All right, they're pretty,
yeah,
they're pretty good questions, I think. Somebody wants you to talk about your stand-up comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell us about that before we go?
Yeah,
we're going to go into record mode. Go ahead.
Yeah, started out. Started out touring, doing it as the character Cyrus. So it was written by me and a couple other stand-up comics that I know. A good friend of mine did some, or Doug Gamble did some work for me. He's written from, people can Google Doug. He's written for a lot of well-known comics. And most of the time now, I think he just writes presidential speeches. But he's written for me, a couple of good friends of mine that do stand up. So I did, it started out just as an appearances, and then it went to, club owners and stuff needing something more for their money, and it just went from 20 minutes to an hour and 15. Now it's, you know, I mean, after 7 years, it's really, it's about 35, 40 minutes, I guess.
Cool.
All right. A little bit more real, not so much, not so cartoonish as I kind of felt it was in the early beginning, because you're, you know, as Cyrus, you're going up there, you know, but still fun. You know, love making people laugh. So it's just really been an extension of what I've been doing anyway in front of a camera. And being trained in the theater helped, being up in front of people, you know, kind of staring at you. hoping you're gonna say something that's funny. Yeah.
Oh my God, I don't think I could do that ever.
I don't think so.
That freaked me out. Especially if it wasn't funny. But it's just looking at you like, that's not funny. I don't know. I don't think I'd do it. All right. Somebody else wants to know if you can play a musical instrument. I have no idea why somebody wants to know that, but they're wanting to know it. Can you play a musical instrument?
I think I could play the spoons. I could probably tap those against my thigh pretty decently. And that scrub board thing, I think I could do that. But other than that, no, I've never played a musical instrument. I don't think I had the time. I was so wrapped up in athletics most of my life, between hockey and basketball. I never really thought of doing anything else. To be quite honest, I just didn't have the time. I spent hours and hours just shooting baskets or on ice surface playing hockey. So my time was totally devoted to athletics and nothing but thinking about playing professional hockey and or basketball. So, no, unfortunately, I wish I did play a musical instrument, but today, you know, they just put somebody else's hands and do a close up and suddenly I'm playing a musical instrument in a film or TV show. So, yeah. You know, I've seen lots of people do that. So it's okay. If anybody's got that idea, you know, just, you know, get somebody to just do a close up of my hands.
Can
somebody
sing?
Else do that for me.
Somebody else wants to know if you can sing.
I can sing. I can sing. I went to Nova Scotia Conservatory of Music and took voice lessons there, and have a pretty decent range.
That's cool to know. I won't ask you to sing. You don't have to sing. That's awesome. Okay,
not going
I'm just
to right now. No.
No. We got the ringtones out of you. We're all good. Or whatever that was, the recording. So funny. You should see the texts I have from the kids. So funny. I can't believe he did that. Okay, so we're just going to have fun, cause, and then we'll go here. Two more. Somebody wants to know how your golf game is.
Golf game.
Friend.
was a plus two handicap. Not anymore since my shoulder surgery. I didn't get to play since the end of last August. I'm not sure what I would call it. Maybe a 3 or 4 handicap before I ended last season, I guess. Did compete in some long drive competitions in Canada here. So do hit a golf ball pretty long, you know, I think 370 is the longest I've hit a golf ball, but, you know, probably average 330 off the tee with a driver.
Wow, and it goes where you want it to go?
Yeah, no, it's going straight. Okay. It's 330 off the tee. I'm hitting par 5s and 2.
That's awesome. And with the shoulder rehab and stuff like that, will you be able to play golf again okay? What do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
good. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I've been working out probably now for the last 6 weeks. I'm starting to feel pretty strong. I think I look almost, you know, like I did before both surgeries now. It's just the strength in the shoulder and flexibility, but I think I'll be fine.
Okay. This is Googleable, guys. I'll ask him anyway. You just want him to say it or something. I'm not sure. How tall are you? Okay, come on. Someone else not tall. I'm asking.
6'1".
Okay. We're going to end on 6'1". We're going to end the show now. No more questions, guys.
Okay.
Too funny. I think everybody, the word has spread that the list of calls as we've been talking has been going getting longer and longer and longer with people listening. It's too funny. Whatever.
That's
it's all great.
Cool.
It's fabulous. Thank you guys all for listening. It's been really fun having you on and getting to know you better. And I appreciate you just coming on here and talking about everything. It's been really fun. Great guest.
Like I said, I appreciate the opportunity and thank you for thinking of me. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for everybody tuning in, and they know how to get a hold of me on the social media, Facebook Twitter.
Yeah. Which one
Instagram.
Do you like the best?
I'm on Facebook, I guess. I do answer emails there. Not as much as, I just find Twitter is just kind of convenient. There's quite a bit of pictures and goofy little memes and things like that that, have been posted on Instagram. So, there is, it's kind of a cool little spot if you're looking for all the pictures and some video and stuff like that all at once. Sometimes I find Facebook is just so, there's just so much going on there nowadays that it's just kind of like, my God, if they go to my fan page, I tend to go to my fan page more so than the profile pages. They're full anyway. I mean, they drop, but I mean, friend requests when you can, there was one, once upon a time, of course you weren't able to send anybody on Facebook. If they had a fan page, you weren't allowed to contact them with an email, but now you can. So, I always tell people, just to go to the fan page. I would rather get rid of the profile pages and just have one big and just have the fan page so that everybody would just go into one thing, because it becomes very difficult to try to keep track of all the social media things that are on there, that are out there today. The only things that I deal with: Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I don't really bother with anything else. I do have some page managers that help me out, because I can't, it'd be a full-time job, just keeping track of it all. People are often contacted with their responses before I get to some of that stuff. But, I do get to the important stuff from people. So, I'm not trying to discourage them from contacting me. I'm just letting them know how they can get a hold of me if they need to.
Perfect. All right. Well, I sure appreciate you being on here. I know we're a little bit over time. I thought we were going to end at 30 minutes and we're like an hour and 10. So thank you for being here.
I'm just long winded. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I didn't mean to hold anybody up from supper or anything like that. Yeah.
No, it's perfect. A perfect show. We all got to know you so much better and really, really appreciate it. So thank you everybody for listening. Thank you to Bernard Robichaux for being here with us. You can visit his website at bernardrobichaux.com, or he's on Twitter at Bernie Robichaux. And I just thank you all so much for listening and sharing our show. We started very grassroots here at Best Ever You with our first guest, and we didn't know who we were quite talking to or what we were doing. And we've got millions of downloads now and listens, and we just appreciate you guys all being with us and supporting our guests. That's what's really most important to me. We have over 400 guests now on this radio show, and I love how you guys all wrap your arms around each person that's here, and they like become family. It's like a big Best Ever You family of sorts. So I really appreciate it. Lots of love to everybody who's out there struggling with the flu or anything else. I wish you well, and just get safe through the winter time here. It's been a heck of a flu season for sure. And I know I can hear that move, Bernard, to California with all the, we just got a foot of snow here yesterday. I'm just thinking, melt. So the California dream sounds perfect right now.
I don't want to hear anything more about snow.
No, I don't either. Okay, we'll go back to 6'1". He's 6'1", everybody. All right.
Okay.
Funny. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Okay.
Take care and have a great night. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.